Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and you're welcome to join us whenever you want. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Lines get kind of busy in the show. We're here for 2 hours. So if you have a car question, I'm especially good if you and your wife or you and your husband are arguing about some kind of a car thing. You can call me about that, and I'll settle the argument with the highest bidder. Okay, so I'll just give you a snapshot of what's going on around me. I'm up in Payson, and it's, as you can imagine, we're kind of snowed in. I've got a big tractor that I use to clear the road out to the road that is paved. But I got in the tractor, had my wife and my granddaughter with me, and we make it about, 100 yards, 300 feet, and the right rear tire that's twice as tall as my granddaughter is goes flat. Now we got to back out, but at this particular point, I no longer have four-wheel drive. I have, like, two-wheel drive. So we back out, and the guy's here fixing it right now. And so we've had to go to old-time ideas. We use a really small tractor and chip the ice off the road, and then we push it aside. So it's really living. I mean, I'm grateful that it's 2021. I can imagine what it was like long before motor vehicles. So anyway, the sun is shining, things are looking good, and from now on it should look good. And I do know that the roads, or I've been told this morning that the roads up and down the mountain are just fine. So anyway, that's your weather warning. Last week, I went on a tirade about aftermarket warranty companies. We deal with those on a regular basis. We don't recommend them. We don't even like to work with them. It is a very bad relationship between the repair industry and the aftermarket warranty companies. And the reasons number 20 or 30 reasons, I probably could come off the top of my head. So my point in this whole issue is you buy a new car and it's got a 3-year, 36,000 mile warranty or 3-year, 50,000, whatever it's got, and they want to sell you an aftermarket warranty policy that doesn't even start working for 3 years. I struggle with that thought philosophy. Now, if I sell one of these, and if I were to sell one of these, they're very lucrative for the salesperson. So there's lots of motivation to sell an aftermarket warranty policy. And I started pumping gas in 1968, and I've been in this industry since 1979. And I can tell you, we've never seen anybody get what they deserve. We've never seen anybody make money on one of these policies, in spite of the fact that they had a major engine or transmission failure because of all this stuff in the contract. So last week I went on this tirade about these aftermarket companies. The next caller. And I also talked about dealerships and independents and credit unions are the three places you're likely to get those. Even guys that have independent repair shops like I do, they sell them. I don't, but some do. And, of course, wherever you finance it, the bank or the credit union, they oftentimes sell it. And then, of course, whoever you buy it from oftentimes sells it. So anyway, I embarrassed myself, I embarrassed my family, I embarrassed my wife, and the next caller is, he says something to this. Hi, my name is Dan, and I work at a local dealership. And I mean, folks, I just want to die, because I'm going, holy mackerel, this is not going to turn out good. And he says, and I just... I was beside myself. I'm thinking, you have the biggest mouth in the whole wide world. Everybody around you is right. You're an idiot. And he goes, my name's Dan, and I'm from a dealership, and everything you said is right. And now I'm gone from completely out of control to, what did he just say? So we had a nice conversation. And he was the kind of guy that him and I would get along so well. He wanted to further his education. He wanted to move up the ladder. He wanted to move from a technician to a shop foreman, a shop foreman to a service manager and stuff like that. We discussed compensation plans where one plan, the sales of the entire shop is split evenly amongst the technicians, which I've never used because you always have big dogs and little dogs, and there's no reason for the little dogs to be feeding off the big dogs, and so forth and so on. So it was a great thing. But... you can't imagine the policies that people have sent me via email about their particular aftermarket warranty. So I got the best one I got, and I didn't cherry pick these, is a 12-page vehicle service program terms of agreement. This is a 12-pager. Folks, in here is nothing for you. It's everything for them. I'm going to just read you some of this stuff. Breakdown means the inability of a properly maintained covered part. You better have your maintenance records, and they better be right. And if it says you're supposed to change your transmission fluid at 30,000 miles, you better be close to it. Again, properly maintained covered part. Properly maintained. That means if you miss any of those, and if you don't have the wheel bearings packed, or if you don't flush the cooling system and the water pump fails, you're out. It goes on to say, maintenance records means all original invoices, receipts, and any other documents that demonstrate all required maintenance has been performed up to the manufacturer's predetermined standards. That's your owner's manual. So you better get used to that, baby, because you're going to need it. This is the one that we reserve the right to use original equipment manufactured parts, aftermarket parts, or recycled parts. Recycled parts. Now, OEM parts means that you're going to buy them from a dealership. And then they talk about aftermarket parts. Folks, they're one of the same. There is no company that makes Ford parts and Chevy parts and Chrysler parts and Honda and Toyota parts. They all buy them from some manufacturing plant somewhere in the world. So there's a company here in the United States that makes like 89% of the batteries sold in all the United States. They just have different tags on them. There's only three spark plug manufacturers in the world. And how many spark plugs are there out there? It's not an issue of OEM is better than aftermarket. It's the same part. But then we talk about recycled parts. Now, people say, I want you to give me a Dodge part. I'm not going to argue with the front counter. If you want a Dodge part, you're going to pay more for it. I'll get you a Dodge part. But if you were my mother-in-law and I loved my mother-in-law and she had a Dodge, I wouldn't be buying the part from a Dodge dealer. I can buy it cheaper, and I'm going to sell it cheaper, period. Number four. I'm just going through. I'm already at page six, and it's unbelievable. You must have your vehicle inspected and serviced in accordance with the manufacturer's recommendations in your owner's manual. That's the third time they've said that. You are required to follow the maintenance schedule that applies to your driving habits and climate conditions. They're going to determine what applies to your driving habits and the climate conditions. Failure to adhere to the owner's manual recommendations may result in a denial of your service. Claims are limited to being initiated by you. Otherwise, the shop can't be involved. They get to ask you first. You're not going to know the right answers. So therefore, you may very well say something that's going to allow them to say thank you, but no. It has to be initiated by you and not various repair facilities working on your vehicle. You have to call us. You have to get authorizations to us, and you can take your vehicle to the repair facility of your choice. But then they change that a little later on. We reserve the right to inspect your vehicle. At our discretion, we may move or tow your vehicle to another location at no cost to you in order to inspect the vehicle for this purpose. So what they're doing is they're going to tow it to another facility. This is what happens historically. Tow it to another facility, somebody that they're in lockstep with. They'll say, oh, no, it's this, this, and this, and then they'll get a much cheaper price. But you're going to deal with somebody who you've never dealt with before, and you may very well not have the experience or the knowledge or the reputation on the Internet, all that kind of stuff. So they get to tow it away. If we fail to settle a claim presented to us by the purchaser of this program, you are entitled to a claim against us after 60 days of receiving proof of loss or damage. This vehicle service program is not a contract of insurance or an insurance policy. Then they go on to say, transmission repairs due to non-factory installed tow packages. Again, there's no such thing as a factory tow package. A tow bar and a tow hitch are all the same. One of the best manufacturers in Arizona used to be in Phoenix. So any repairs not given prior authorizations, regardless if the breakdown has occurred, we won't cover it. Number nine, any damages, here's the kicker, determined to be a direct or probable cause of a pre-existing mechanical issue, whether it's known to the owner at the time of purchase or not, this contract won't be applied. Any damages determined later, this is kind of going back in history, any damages determined in January to be a direct or probable cause of a pre-existing mechanical condition, whether or not the owner knows it or anybody else knows it, we're going to void your warranty. Any malfunction or damage that's due to an already worn out or malfunctioning part is not covered. Wait a minute. A malfunctioning part, isn't that covered? Isn't a cart, he says, already worn out? But I can believe already worn out brake pads, tires, belts. I got that. Or malfunction part. Well, a malfunction is part of this contract. So I haven't changed my mind. If you buy them, go ahead. We hate, as an industry, I speak for 99 out of 100 shop owners, we just hate it. The guy that comes in used to teach auto mechanics at high school. He doesn't know anything about anything. He asks a lot of questions. He has a predetermined notion. He's either going to deny the claim or accept the claim. And then he'll probably be, and the second person is somebody in some other country or somewhere else, and we have to talk to them. And by the time we're done, we've got hours and hours and hours of conversation before we can ever start the car. Then they're going to scrutinize our pricing. So, again, you can do whatever you want. 602-508-0960. Larry Harker's Auto is at 38th Avenue and Indian School. He's not one of these shops that's going to probably deal with these kinds of issues with aftermarket warranty companies, unless, of course, it's one of our very best customers. So they've been around since 1967. Bob and Ellen are fine people. Bob runs the shop and Ellen runs the front counter. You'll meet both of them if you go there. And so, again, 38th Avenue and Indian School, they're really, really good at what they do, and they have technicians that are really, in on a 1 to 10 scale, are really 9s and 10s. And that's a pretty good deal. So that's Larry Harker's Auto, 38th Avenue and Indian School, 602-508-0960. When it comes to car repair shops, most of you have one that you trust and you like. And my advice is, keep them. If you've done business with them, and perhaps maybe two generations of your family has done business with them, then keep them, especially if they've been in business for a long time. If you're looking for a good shop, I have a good list of shops. Action Auto Repairs at I-17 in Deer Valley, been around since 1983, and I've known Tom, the owner, since the early 80s. We kind of disagree on when, but I'm pretty sure it's 1983, and I'm right. Nevertheless, I-17 in Deer Valley, ASE-certified technician, has been around a long time, does a good job, and frankly, he's a great place. So if you're in that area, I-17 in Deer Valley, then Action Auto Repair is perhaps a shop that you should go to. When it comes to car repair, oftentimes we lose focus, and the focus really is to keep the car safe and well-maintained. It's not to just scare people into doing things, and it has nothing to do with trying to over maintain your vehicle because it'll love you more and not leave you stranded. Your vehicle has lots of brains, but it's not something that's going to make that kind of logical decision that, oh, he didn't do this, so I'm going to break down. If that were the case, then Mark Salem would never break down, and neither would any of his technicians or his staff or anything. That just doesn't happen. So the best idea is to deal with your shop. And the conversation should sound like this. What am I due for today, and what do I need to look for in the future? That's a conversation you can have with the oil change, on an oil change. So just tell me what we've got. Look at my odometer, look at my owner's manual, and just kind of tell me what the next year looks like. Now, during an oil change, we obviously change your oil and your filter. We grease any components that still have zerts on them, so we can grease them. Many of them are sealed. And we check all your fluids, so we check this, all of them. So coolant, battery, if it's accessible, transmission, windshield wiper fluid, differential fluid, and I'm sure I'm missing some. It's difficult for me to run all that through my head. But there's just lots of fluid in your engine. We're supposed to check it all over your car, and we're supposed to check it, make sure the color is okay and it's not burnt and it doesn't smell burnt. And then we're also seasoned enough, most of us are seasoned enough, to look and say, okay, this needs a coolant flush. we know what the signs are. You take the radiator cap, you turn it over, and you've got some, you know, jello on it. Or maybe you look inside and you can't tell whether it's pink or green or red or orange. And that's probably a good idea that we flush the cooling system out. Transmission services, there's a wide variety of things you can do, including, and you should follow your owner's manual, but they hold about 10 quarts of oil. So here's the deal. If we pull the filter, and this is what I say, let's do the pan and the filter first. So let's say at 20,000 miles, we're going to take the pan off and we're going to look inside to make sure there's nothing abnormal in there. It's normal for us to have ground up metal in there, not something that would fit on the tip of a spoon spread out over this 1 square foot pan. It's just normal. We don't want to see any snap rings. We don't want to see any big pieces of aluminum. We don't want to see any big pieces in the pan. Change the filter, put 4 quarts back in it. The next time we do it, my advice is we flush the transmission, which means we're going to do all 10 quarts. We're not going to take the pan off. We're just going to flush the transmission. So the first time we service it, we do filter, 4 or 5 quarts. Second time we service, we don't do the filter. We do the 10, 12 quarts. That's what I do. And the guys I trust that work on transmissions agree that that's certainly the best. There's a lot of shops out there that say we want to flush them every time. We want to do the filter, the pan, and flush them. I'm not a fan of that. I'm not saying it's unethical. I'm just not. That's not what I do to my own. So, again, filter and fluid first on 4-quart replacement. And then the next time it's in for service or when it's due for service, then we flush the transmission. So that's kind of it. So check all the belts, all the hoses, which is rubber components, all the fluids, all the tires, all that stuff. And the whole focus of an oil change is to look into the future and be able to say to you, this is something you need to look at, or this is something that you need to have addressed. I've written down a physical description of what I see wrong. I see the right rear shock absorbers bent and leaking oil like crazy. It's not likely to cause you any additional damage, but I would suggest you do them in pairs. So we need to do the two back ones. And here is the estimate for that. That includes an alignment because the rear end of your car has adjustments that we need to clarify after we replace the shock absorber. And this is something that you can wait on if you want, but it's something that you probably should address whenever, in the next month or two or three. There is a slight danger of having a bad shock absorber in a panic situation. But frankly, I've never seen a car accident, and I've been involved in the examination of car accidents for the last 20 years. I've never seen a car accident that anybody attributed to a bad shock absorber. So it's one of those things that you may be presented that it's something you need to have done right now, but I'm not of the opinion, and I think I speak for about 70% of our industry. Most of us are the same. So we look it over. We're trying to determine what you need before your next oil change. We're looking at the tire wear, and the tire wear is important because we know that the front tires should wear the outside and inside edges a little bit, where the back tires should be nice and square. So the outside edges of the back tires are going to be square because all they do is follow. But the front tires, we're turning left and we're turning right, so we're scrubbing the edges off. And this is a very minute amount. But abnormal wear on the front tires tells you that there's something wrong with the front tires. So if you've got the left front tire that's got normal wear, but the right front tire has got significant inside edge wear, that points to a problem, and that needs to be addressed. And once you wear a tire into a bad pattern, it's never going to get better. So even though we stand the tire up straight, instead of having it leaning in a little bit, it's not going to fix the tire. So you rotate them around until you get to the point where you go, okay, from a safety reason, we need a pair of tires on this axle because one of them was damaged before. Not too long ago, a friend of mine went into an auto repair shop and had an oil change. And let me preface this by saying that there's three different kinds of oils for your car. There's a conventional, which is what we had in the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s. And then we have a semi-synthetic, which is a blended oil. That's some synthetic and some conventional. And then we have a full synthetic, which is the big dog premium oil. Those are the three. All three of them have a different oil change interval. Conventional oil, which is most of us grew up with, and our parents for sure, is 3,000 miles. 3 to 5. That's generally speaking, 3 to 5. And I work for Chevron, and I'm trained by Chevron and Valvoline, so I know what the experts say. The second one, the semi-synthetic, has got between 5 and 7,500 mile service. Now, each one of these is about twice the cost of the next one. Then synthetic oil is between, depending on your car, between $7,500 and some Mercedes are $15,000. So that's where you kind of look at your owner's manual. And they're expensive. The semi-synthetic or the full synthetics are expensive. So he takes it in, and on the work order it says premium oil change, premium oil, blah, blah, blah. And then the door sticker on the car says 3,000 miles. Well, I recognize the part number, and I recognize that he put a semi-synthetic in the car. And this happens to be a Jeep. He put a semi-synthetic in this Jeep.
1 minute.
The problem with that is he put a 3,000-mile, you need to return door sticker on it, when really semi-synthetic is 5 to 7,500 miles. So it's kind of counterproductive. What does it look like when we sell you a premium oil, but we deny you the benefit of that oil? We call you in early. We put a number on there that's going to get you in early, so you didn't really take advantage of the oil. So the premium oil, but you didn't take advantage of it because we told you you need to come in at 3,000 instead of looking at the car and saying, well, it's 5,000 is the minimum and 7,500 is the maximum. So a lot of us go 6,000 miles. That's kind of what we're up against. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. That's the number. There's five lines. Gil's going to answer the line, and they're wide open. So if you have a car question or if you want to talk about tire quality, anything, 602-508-0960. It's half the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. Auto Dynamics is in Sun City. Sun City has lots of car repair shops. There's some good ones out there. But Sun City Auto Dynamics on Grand Avenue and 99th Avenue is one of the best, if not the best. I've known the family since the 70s. And Derek and his father, Chuck, own and operate that area. So, family owned and operated since 1982. They don't pay their technicians or management's a commission or a percent of your repair bill. Therefore, they won't sell unnecessary parts and repairs. So if you're in Sun City, Auto Dynamics, north side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue. And Gary, you're up first. How can I help you?
Good morning. Good morning. Tire question. Going to replace truck and trailer tires. They're very old. My question is, the old tires, when the tire dealers get them, how do they dispose of them to guarantee that somebody doesn't get a hold of them and, ride an old tire into an accident?
There's no guarantee. There's no guarantee.
Yeah. Where's the liability fall in your experience?
Well, they can't track the tire back to you unless they go through me. Mm-hmm. And let me just explain. Lots of people come in and buy our old tires. Some of them are going to call it, charge us a waste fee, and they're going to take them to the proper location to be recycled mm-hmm. and ground up. Some of them are going to take them to other areas of town and other areas of the state and sell them as used tires. But I've never seen anybody track that backwards where it came from. Although I have a case right now, that exact situation where a used tire was put on and people got hurt really bad. And they're talking about, at least we traced it back to who picked it up, but he doesn't know which one of the repair shops he picked it up, because he picked it up in a 3-day period, and he just threw it in the back of his truck. So I don't want you to worry about somebody doing that. I can tell you.
Yeah, I was curious, because the tires look very good.
Yeah.
And they're 8 and 9 years old.
Yep,
so.
Yep. And you know, real quick story. I had an attorney bring a motorhome in. His father had just passed away. And he brought this Bounder motorhome in that hadn't been run on the road for 5 years. So we did all the things. And we called him up and we said it needs tires because the tires are well past the 10-year mark. Oh, no. He says, no, I'm not going to do that. And I said, okay, well, you're not driving out of here with those tires. I'll put a set of tires on for free. I've known this guy for 20 years. I'll put a set of tires on for free, but I'm going to tell all of our friends that you're a cheap SOB and that I had to put tires on your motorhome because you don't love your family. So he laughed and he goes, put tires on it. Well, this is what we did to make those motorhome tires look brand new. We drilled 1-inch holes in the sidewalls of every single one of them.
Yeah.
So we just took a big
service. Yeah, that's what I was concerned about, because these tires look brand new. They don't even have sidewall checks. So
you know what? tell them you want the tires back, and that, or bring your drill with a 1-inch hole saw and say to them, they're going to charge you a waste tire fee anyway. That's already taken care of it. You say, you know what, it's just, I don't want it on my conscience that other people might die because these tires are put on. So with, I'm going to tell you right now, I'm going to drill a hole in the sidewall. And you want to charge me the waste fee, I'll pay it because that's the transportation cost to the dump. But, yeah, you can disable them if you want. That's how I would do it if I were you. Okay?
Thank you.
All right, you bet. Bob, you're up next. How can I help you?
Good morning, Dr. Mark. Quick question on those tires. Didn't they used to grind those up here in Arizona and use them in the, mix them with the macadam and put them on the freeway?
Yes.
I remember when they were doing that, it was really quiet.
You're absolutely right.
Oh, okay.
We don't generate enough tires to really do that.
2 minutes.
And so makes a difference whether the supply line is there.
Oh, I see. Okay, thanks. Antifreeze came in the possession of, a few gallons of new antifreeze. Some is red and some is the green stuff. What's the difference? And can I use them? I've got a 98 Ford Ranger and a 2004 Ford Explorer. Help me out.
Okay. The green one has a shorter life range than the red one. And is it red or orange, or can you tell?
It's red.
Okay. All right. I think that's Chrysler. Some of them have different colors, and there's purple, and there's red, and there's orange, and there's green, and all kinds of stuff. But the green one, you're going to mix 50-50 with water, and you can use it wherever you want. The red one, you can use 50-50 with water, and you can use it wherever you want. There's a lot of us that pour an amber coolant, which is a universal coolant. I don't want to have to buy seven colors of fluid. So in my case, we just use an amber, which is a universal coolant that will handle everybody. So that's what we do. But to answer your question bluntly, you can use either one of them. 50-50 mix with clean tap water, and you're home free. Okay?
Thank you. You're a genius. Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye. You're welcome, Dennis. And Larry, I got to take a break. I'll be back in about 3.5-4 minutes. Dennis, you're first. Larry, you're second. Anybody else? 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. But when you call in and talk to Gil, and he just got out of jail, so don't use any bad words because he hasn't heard any for a while, then you're going to be right after Gary and Bob. Well, it's 43 minutes after the hour, 10 o'clock. I have only one shop in northeast Scottsdale, Phoenix, and I have only one shop I can recommend in Mesa. I try, but my filter's pretty tough to pass. Blackwell Auto is up in the northeast, 40th and Greenway. He's been around a long time. Tom works on old cars, new cars, trucks, diesels, motorhomes, everything you can imagine. 40th and Greenway, he's the only one in a 5-10-mile circle that I can recommend to you just because others that have applied just don't have the experience or don't have some portion of what I ask for, like insurance. And others have a bad presence on the Internet or at the Better Business Bureau, and unfortunately they don't fit the parameters. So Blackwell Auto, northeast Scottsdale, a good place to go, I promise. Dennis, you're up.
Hey, Mark, enjoy your show. Quick question.
Okay.
I noticed lately, I have a Honda and I have a motorhome, but on the Honda, it seems like when I take it in for an oil change, they're always seem to be hitting me up lately for the strut, the rubber grommets that go in the crossbar members in the center of the car, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I have no symptoms. There's no rattle. There's the tires are wearing correctly. You know, the car is 10 years old, you know?
Okay.
But they want a couple $1,000 to replace them.
Sway bar bushings, lower control arm bushings, both of those. Here's the problem. You used to come in every 3,000 miles, and we got to get you there. So every 3,000 miles, we threw stuff at you. And we got that $9.95 oil change and the average ticket price up to $100, $110. Well, now when you come in every 10,000 miles for an oil change or 15,000 miles for an oil change, then we've lost all this business. And the key words here is this is an easy question. Symptoms. Ask them, what symptoms do I have that you're going to repair? Well, they're cracked. They're cracked, or they look old, or they're deteriorating. Thank you. I'll wait until they knock. Now, second question is, Mark, have you ever seen anybody die in a car wreck because the lower control arm bushings are cracked or the sway bar bushings are cracked? And the answer is hell no. So the reason why a certain portion of my industry is doing that is because business is down because you guys don't come and see us as often as you used to, okay? So that's it. Thank you, Dennis. Thank you very much.
Hey, I appreciate it, man. Thank you, sir.
You're welcome. Larry, you're up next.
Larry?
Yes, sir.
Larry. Yeah, thanks for taking my call, Mark. Hey, I want to give you a quick story from the last caller. I had the same thing happen to me about a month ago, oil change. Changed the upper and lower bushings, $2,500. Now, I have a 15-year-old car. And I said, well, I have any symptoms. And I said, all I need is a front end alignment. And the guy said, well, I can't do that unless you do the bushings. I said, okay, I'm not going to do it then. So I took it to another shop and had them do the alignment, and they did their 35 point check, and the bushings never came up.
What else do you need to know? You know, here's the problem. The problem
My real question. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
The technician is being pressured by management. Maybe service manager. Could be anybody. We need to sell. We need to bring our average ticket price up. So the service rider comes up, or the technician comes up with something. It goes to the shop foreman. Then it goes to this guy, and then it goes to the service rider who doesn't know crap from Shinola. All they are is a parrot. So they've been told you've got bad bushings and you need to have them replaced and they're dangerous because that's what they've been told. So when you ask them what symptoms, they're lost. It's just the way it is right now.
Yeah.
When you hear the word cracked, the bushings are cracked or the bushings are bad, and you ask you and Dennis both ask the perfect question. What symptoms do I have? Sway bar bushings, lower control arm bushings. They both have a clunk. The sway bar bushing has a clunk on a bump. Bump, 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 or bump up on the upstroke or on the downstroke. On the lower control arm bushings, you got a thump when you stop and a thump when you take off as the lower control arm bushings go forward when you stop and they shift backwards when you accelerate. That's it. So if you don't have a thump or a clunk on a bump or on a stop or an acceleration, they're still good. They're still good. And if you want to spend the $1,500, can I raise my hand and have a bite of you? Can I? Anyway.
Well, that's true. Hey, I have one other quick question.
Sure.
I have a 2005 Toyota Sequoia four-wheel drive, and I think I'm going to need brakes all the way around. What should I expect to pay for that?
If you don't need any rotors, and we're going to do a pad slap with some machining of the rotors, you're likely to spend probably $200 to $250 an axle. If we get in there and all of a sudden the caliper's leaking, and that would mean you're adding brake fluid and the light would come on and maybe that hasn't happened, and so then you go, oh. Or if we're going to put premium pads in there, which are really just expensive regular pads that they call for anyway. And I'm only talking about 5% of our industry, okay? I think a pad slap with some machining of the rotors is all I would do. Now, if we have uneven wear on the front pads, if the inner side pad is worn more than the outer, we need calipers. If the outer pad is worn more than the inner pad, we need a hardware kit. Those are valid things, and you'll know it because you ask for your old pads back. That's it. But $250 to $300, $250 to $300 an axle, okay?
Okay. Yeah, hey, thanks a lot. Enjoy your show.
All right, thank you very much. Joe, you're up next.
Yeah, hi, Mark. I need to pick your brain on some tuning up here. I've got some older trucks. One of them is a 1955 Ford, and I've been trying to set the timing and the idle and everything. So tell me how I'm doing here. I've got 500 RPM for the idle, which is what the manual calls for. I've adjusted my vacuum so that I have the highest intake vacuum. I've plugged off the
okay, stop. Stop.
The distributor.
Let's take.
And I'll set my timing.
Okay, hold.
Okay.
I'll never remember all of this. So let's go back to the 600. Is it an automatic or a standard? Is the transmission?
It's a standard.
Okay. If that is an idle that you're happy with, and if that's an idle you're happy with, and it's not dying and stalling, then keep it. I would think a more applicable idle would be some. And now, it's a six cylinder or a V8.
It's a six cylinder.
Okay. I'd be more inclined to 600, but we're just splitting hairs here. So if you're happy with 500, as far as the engine vacuum is concerned, is your middle name Fred Flintstone? Because we did that back in the 50s and the 60s. That's not how we do it today. If you want to do it perfectly today,
okay,
you get it really warmed up and you go out and drive it kind of hard and accelerate kind of hard and you advance the timing until it rattles and then you back off 2 degrees. And the second part of that is doesn't drag the starter when it's hot. Otherwise, when you hit it cold, it goes, but if it drags the starter, it goes, if that's the case, back off the timing just a little bit. But there's a sweet spot between dragging the starter and pinging, and that's where you want to be.
Okay.
All right?
Okay, so go ahead and advance it. If I get my stuff, advance the timing until I get a ping and then draw back 2 degrees.
Yeah, yeah.
And don't drag the starter.
And if you advance it too far, it'll drag the starter.
Okay, yeah. All right.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Oh, and wait. The air-fuel mixture screw on the carburetor, when it's fully warmed up and the choke is wide open, you're going to listen to it idle.
Yeah.
And then you're going to back the screw out until it changes. And then you're going to screw the screw in about a quarter turn until it changes again. We need to find the outside and the inside of the range. When you screw it in and it goes, and it goes, then you back it out a half a turn, and you're home free. That's how you do it.
All right.
Okay?
Okay, thank you very much, Mark.
You're welcome. Bye. You're welcome. 602-508-0960. Gil, we got anybody in the wings?
We do. We have Harold.
Harold, good morning.
Hi, Mark. I'm the guy that called you 2 weeks ago relative to the insurance plans that set your intestinal tract on fire.
I hate you, Harold. Don't you ever call back again, Harold.
I learned a lot, and I'm sure a lot of other people did, too. But my question today is a lot simpler. What's your recommendation on when you should change your fuel filter? I can't find anything in the manuals that to specify an age or a mileage on that thing.
Okay. On most of the cars made north of 2010, we're going to replace them for one of two reasons. Number one, the customer says, I'm having a tough time getting to 65 miles an hour, but I can drive to 60 with no problem. And that's a fuel restriction. So then we take the fuel filter off and then we empty it out. But us tough guys, we don't even empty it out. We put our lips to the end of the inlet of that filter. And there's an arrow that shows the inlet and the outlet. And we put it to our lips, and we aren't smoking at that time. And we put it on our lips like a straw, and we blow really hard. And if the cheeks of our face grow like Louis Armstrong when he was playing the trumpet, and all of a sudden the face turns red, and you're blowing as hard as you can, then over here on your right hand you have a brand new filter and you blow through and it's like a straw. Okay, it needs it. The answer to your question on mileage is I'd certainly be looking at it between 30 and 50,000 miles. If you have a symptom where you have a speed issue, then you need to replace the fuel filter. Until you have a speed issue, and I wouldn't take it all the way that far, then you have no problems. To be honest with you, we pull them out at 50, 60, 70,000 miles, and they're not bad. But we're not going to pull it out and blow on it and put it back in. We're going to pull it out and replace it. But sometimes we blow on it, and sometimes you have those technicians that are just too doggone good to put their lips to a fuel filter. It's up to the shop.
Mm-hmm.
But that's my answer.
Okay, I got a recommendation. My car has 70,000 on it, and they recommended I do it, even though there's no drivability problem. So I'm going to go ahead and do it.
I agree. I think the way it was presented to you, and I think with all the data that they gave you, I like them. I like them. I would hope my staff would do something like that. And then here's something else. You say to them, I know you got a black magic marker. Would you write the mileage on that fuel filter for me? And that's what most of us will do that anyway. But we'll just write the date or something on the filter so that the next guy knows. So the next guy gets underneath there and he wants to sell you a fuel filter and he looks up and it's dated, you know, last month. That'll change his mind. So that's what I do. Okay?
Thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. Folks, I don't want to misrepresent our industry. It's not an industry full of bandits. there's maybe 5% of them out there that really have their pocketbooks in front of your needs, and that's the difference. It's, do you really need what they're trying to sell you, or are they trying to sell you something because sales are down? It is true that sales were down, and it is true that most of us were at 40% loss in sales because of this COVID. As we all talk to one another, and we do, so people call me and say, where are you at, Salem? And I call them and say, where are you at? So we're constantly comparing numbers. Some guys talk in percentages, some guys talk in dollars. It doesn't make any difference to me. But Salem was down 40% during the COVID, which is the last 3 months of last year and the first 3 months of this year. So for about six months, we're down 40%. We're healthy. We're fine. So are a lot of other shops. Many of us own our own, you know, real estate on our own building. And so if we don't pay our ex-wife rent, then we're still going to be okay. And I'm kidding about that. I don't have an ex-wife. Neither do most of my friends. So when you look at the big picture, yeah, it hurt us, but it's still hurting businesses today. But the automobile industry's returned almost to normal, and some guys are better than normal, and here's why. It's because you're home. So it's real convenient because mom and dad are both home, or dad's home because he's working at home. Now we can bring the car in and get the oil change done. We can get this done. We can get that done. So we're seeing a lot of the family cars, and what we're doing is we're seeing mom's car come in first, and then they bring dad's car in and give mom's car back to her. So we're seeing a lot of that. But there's still a lot of people that have requirements on their staff. There's still a lot of shops that demand certain levels of sales. Not a lot. There are some shops that still demand certain levels of sales. I arm you with the right answers. First of all, thank you for your consideration that I need lower control arm bushings. Please write that on my bill. You need lower control arm bushings. And then just put the out-the-door price. How much will it cost me? Can I write my check in advance before I leave home?
1 minute.
Bad people are not going to write down you need lower control arm bushings. They're going to forget. Because you don't need them, they're going to forget. So that's kind of the issue. And then the second thing you can say is what symptoms do I have now? Fuel filter. I bet you can't do 75. You know, you're right. I'm having trouble at 75. I go, da-da, da-da-da-da, da-da-da-da. How about 70? Okay. Yeah, fuel filter. Okay, lower control arm bushings. Does it clunk when you come to an abrupt stop? Yeah. When you take off from it after an abrupt stop, does it clunk? Yeah. That's the lower control arm bushings. I'm going to fix that clunk by replacing your lower control arm bushings. And you got a little wear on the outside edge of the tire. That's the conversation. Sometimes the person you're talking to is not technical, and they're five people away from the technician. That sometimes gets to be a problem. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open, and you're welcome to join. You know, when it comes to diesel service, anybody can do oil changes, tire rotations, belts, and hoses. But when they don't run well and they need extensive maintenance, you need to find a shop. Strictly Diesel Service and Repair is one of my shops. I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road, they've been a really good part of our industry for more than 10 years. Nate is the owner. All you have to do is shake his hand to know you're in good hands. First of all, he has hands like a tennis racket, and he's about 9 feet tall. But he's the nicest, smartest diesel guy I know. So Strictly Diesel Service and Repair, I-17 at Pinnacle Peak Road. If you have a problem with your Ford, Dodge, or Chevy, he can fix it. I'm out of breath because I went outside. The guy that's fixing the tire on my tractor was done. So I had to go out and find out what he did, and I had to pay for him. So I'm sorry I'm out of breath, but we're going to go to Kevin. Kevin, good morning. How can I help you?
How's it going, brother?
You know, I'm north of the dirt. My wife loves me, and I'm not on bail bonds, so I'm in good shape.
Right on, man. Right on. Well, I got a 2015 Honda Fit, 2008 GMC Yukon, and a 94 Dodge Dakota because I like to torture myself and have three different cars, three different eras.
Okay.
My question... Sorry, man. My question today, I just did a rotor cap, distributor wires and spark plugs on the 94 Dodge Dakota. It's got a 5.2.
Okay.
And ever since replacing those, I got a little bit of a rough idle. It was super smooth before that. I made sure no wires were crossed. Everything's looking good. I'm wondering if there's any chance of cross-firing. Maybe the new wires are a little too close to each other.
Okay. If it idles rough, how does it run on acceleration? Is it nice and smooth accelerating up through the gears, so your only problem is it idle?
Yeah, pretty much. I don't notice it once I put my foot on the gas.
Okay. Is there any possibility you didn't plug a vacuum line back on?
I've checked it about four different times. Okay. I mean, there's always a possibility, but...
Okay, this is a fuel-injected vehicle?
One more time.
Is this a fuel-injected vehicle?
Yeah.
Okay, all right. You see, the real problem here is between idle and everything's fine after that. So is it a vacuum leak? And if everything's fine at 30 to 70 miles an hour, it's not fuel delivery. If it's not pinging and not falling on its face and it has all the power it did, it's not timing. So as you go through this big list of, it's kind of a Rolodex, okay, it's only at idle. It doesn't happen between 20 and 50 miles an hour. He can feel it and see it, and he just did all this work. And the fact is that we need to focus on the idle. Did you do any EGR work to it?
It actually had failed emission, so I replaced for NOx. So I replaced the EGR valve and replaced the catalytic converter, and that got us back on board with emission. So.
Okay. I don't have an answer, but here's what I think you should do. I think you should get your propane torch, get it warmed up. I think you should just open the valve and feed the engine propane. We're not lighting the flame. You're going to stick it in the air filter assembly, and we're going to add a little bit of fuel to it. And I wonder if it smooths out. And if it smooths out, then it's going to be, if you add more propane to it, it's going to be the lack of fuel. So then the question is it a fuel pump? Is it a fuel pressure regulator? Or is the computer controlling that? Now, have you pulled the negative cable on it to start all over again?
Yep, did that.
Okay. I can't, even if I could, I can't right now tell you what it is, but once I fixed it, once my industry fixes it, then everybody knows the answers. What did I do wrong, or where did I hit this, or why did I touch this, or you know, that kind of thing. But the diagnostic of that probably starts at about $50 and could run 150. It just depends. Is it an air issue? Is it a fuel issue? Is it a computer issue? Does it not like the EGR? I would unplug the vacuum line at the EGR, and I'd plug it with a golf tee or a pencil. And go drive it and see if that makes any difference. That's one of the things I'd probably do, because you replaced the EGR. Are you sure you got the gasket good and tight on the bottom of the EGR to the exhaust manifold or the intake manifold?
Yeah, I got a Velcro and made it, good and tight. I'm pretty sure there. You know, I actually had a mechanic look at it after I did this and really couldn't figure it out. He tested the EGR valve. They looked for vacuum leaks. Really couldn't find anything. The only thing, I mean, and I was actually on some Dodge forums just trying to, because it, you know, it doesn't really affect anything, but I noticed it.
Okay.
And some people said there's a TSB out there when you do wires on it to put some lumen around the wires so they don't, like, they're not arcing or sending anything between each other.
Okay, that's called dielectric grease. That's called dielectric grease. And if you put new wires on it, you unplug the wire, and it's like toothpaste, and you put in about a quarter of an inch inside, and it's a clear jelly liquid. Then you put the boot on, and you twist it back and forth, take it on and off a couple times. And what it does is it eliminates spark from going somewhere else. But here's the deal. You don't have spark issues. You said it runs fine above idle. You said as you
it
drive
does,
down
yeah.
the road, it's fine. So it's not a spark issue, because if it was, you don't have that.
So, you know,
if you're going to be go driving in the winter and you're going to be driving in the cold weather, and if you're going to be driving down at the river on Saturday afternoon drinking beer, you better put dielectric on the plug wires on both ends of them. But if you're not, then you're in good shape. Anyway, Kevin, good luck to you, buddy. Harry, you're up next. How are you doing?
Pretty good. How are you? Kind of snowed in up there a little bit, huh?
Yep, but you know, it's not bad.
If she can't get to the liquor store, I'm a happy guy.
Well, I tried to recruit Gil to come up and help shovel with some of your snow, but he wasn't having any of that.
I'm in good shape, Harry, because I have a Dodge truck with four-wheel drive. She has a front-wheel drive Edge. So before the tractor tire came off of the wheel, I had almost the place graded. But then my neighbor was kind enough, because I've graded his driveway for him before, he said, hey, how about I drag the Gannon over yours? And I said, perfect. So we have access to the street and to 260, so we're real happy. Folks, I was just teasing wife about her and her alcoholism. I'm just teasing. Okay?
I met her.
I know.
I met your wife before. Okay. She's a nice lady. You're a dragon.
We've been called Jack the Ripper and Snow White, and I'm not Snow White, but we fit together. We're 47 years. I married her when she was 5, so we're 47 years into a marriage. All right, Harry, what are you up to today?
Okay, hey, I was kind of wondering. About time for me to change tires on my Honda Pilot, and. I was wondering, and I want to have the front end checked and for alignment and everything. Should I put the new tires on first and take it over to the shop, or leave the old ones and let them see what they look like before they align it?
You let the question is, drive it over there and say, look at all four tires. Can you read any alignment issues on them? Now, are you going to I-17 and Bell to do that?
Probably.
Okay. Well, probably. You just say Mark Salem says that he knows you're blind and he knows that you can't answer the question appropriately and he knows that you don't know the difference between wear. But here's the deal. The back tires should wear nice and square and the front tires on your Honda Pilot should have a little bit of outside edge wear because the tire leans on turns. If that's all you got, and then when they put the tires on, you have a pull. It's because the tires need to be rotated around because you didn't have the pull before.
Right.
But if you don't have any abnormal wear other than in addition to what I described, then I wouldn't align it. But you can still ask Kurt if what he thinks. But Kurt or Eric, I mean, I'd probably lean on Eric first because Kurt's got gray hair and you have no idea when he's going to be.
Well, Kurt's getting a little thin up on top.
Yeah, and so am I.
I wouldn't say it to his face, but he is getting a little thin.
All right, you ready? You done?
Yeah. No, I got one other question.
Okay.
A lot of these new cars and stuff, understand that the ring tension has been reduced to, make the drag lower, so, they get more oil consumption problems. What do you do with that? I know you try to keep your oil changed and keep it clean and whatever and use the best oil, but what's with that? Is that a problem?
No.
A lot of the new vehicles?
No, it isn't.
Even ones with, I have an EcoBoost Ford, so. I know you love to hear the word Ford.
Well, you're talking apples and oranges here. The EcoBoost is a turbocharged vehicle. We're packing the intake, and we're making that thing a hot rod. So if you're going to stuff it to the floor, I'm sure you do every once in a while to appropriately accelerate, you're going to use a little bit more oil than Renee and her Edge. But the issue really is this has been one of those wive tales on the internet. Here's the deal, Harry. If you're using excessive oil, you're going to foul the spark plug. That's all there is to it. You're going to foul the spark. If you want to know if you're using excessive oil, pull the spark plugs out and look at them. We all engines use oil. Here's the problem. We always went to a 3,000-mile oil change, right? Well, everybody was a half a quart low at 3,000, not a half a quart off full. Okay, there's a one quart between add and full. So everybody was still between add and full, but we were a half a quart down. Well, now we're running 7,500 to 12,000 miles in oil changes, and people are going, oh, my car's consuming oil. No, it isn't. You're going 10,000 miles. You're going a third, half around the equator, and you don't think your engine's going to use a little bit of oil? It's just not a reasonable expectation.
Well, the way they're designed now and engineered, they do that, I understand, for fuel economy and, and whatever. But
no,
the old days they had, things that were
That's not it at all. The ring tension has nothing to do with fuel economy. Plus, we have three rings. So we have a compression ring, and then a wipe dry ring, and then oil control ring. So we got three different. It's just nothing to do with the piston diameter of the rings. If we're going to have emissions, we got to clean up what comes out of the tailpipe, and that has to do with the driver's right foot, and it has to do with fuel and air delivery and timing underneath the hood. So, yes, they make modifications to the motor to make things better, but in reality, there's just lots of wives' tales and explanations that are created by people in my industry to explain their inability to answer the question appropriately. So we just make stuff up, and then it gets on the internet. Sam, you got to wait for me, buddy. I'm sorry. I got a three-minute break, and then Gil's already yelling at me. He's already using bad words. And so I'm going to take a break, Sam, and you're first. 602-508-0960. I have four lines open. When it comes to Mesa, I can only recommend one shop. It's not that there, I'm sure there's good other shops, but they haven't applied. And that some that did apply didn't make the muster, so to speak. But Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing on Main Street, just east of Stapley, is one of those that had no problems whatsoever. Brian and Thelma, I've known their parents since 1970s. I know they come from good stock. I know they know from right from wrong. Both of them were brought up in the car repair industry. So if you're in Mesa and you're looking for a good shop, Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing in Mesa. Sam, good morning. How can I help you?
Hi, good morning. I've got a 65 El Camino that I've done brakes on. I've done wheel cylinders, brake hoses, new springs. New shoes, but one set of shoes are new old stock. They're like 18 years old, but they're still brand new.
Okay.
And then the front set are new. I just purchased those within the last couple of weeks. But I've got a power booster and a new master cylinder, but I've got a really hard pedal. It's like you got to push on it really hard to get the car to stop.
Okay.
And I don't know why.
Okay, it's the booster or the vacuum supply to the booster. That's all it can be. It was fine before you started, and it's not the shoes or the pads. It's not the factory, you know, the new old stock. It's none of that.
The booster was one of the problems. It had a leak in it somehow because I could start the engine and push on the brake, and the engine would rough idle. Off of it, the engine would stop.
But that doesn't do it now, though, right?
No, it does not.
Okay. Well, I don't know. You've given me a wonderful set of circumstances, but I would pull that plastic elbow off of the vacuum line that goes to the booster, and I'd put a vacuum gauge on there at idle, and it should be between 16 and 18 inches of vacuum. Then I'd dump the throttle real hard, which should go to zero, and then as soon as I let go of the throttle, it should come right back to what its original was. So I don't know where you bought the booster. The second plan B would be change the booster. In my world, we wouldn't change the booster as a diagnostic process. We would check the supply of vacuum, and if the booster was bad, then we know how to check the booster. But you can also check the booster if you start it up and let it run for about 5 minutes and then shut it off, walk away from it, come back 60 seconds later, and pull that 90-degree plastic nipple out of the rubber boot on the booster. And if you pull it out and it goes, then the booster's fine.
Right, okay. And the other thing would be to pull the hose off at that check valve and put a vacuum gauge on there to see how much vacuum I'm pulling at the manifold.
Well, yes. And then I want you to go to the manifold and pull that line off the manifold and get a flashlight and look inside there, because what happens if that 3/8 port is 80% plugged with carbon?
Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, you know, I would, and then here's the deal. You can have 16, 18 inches of vacuum on your gauge, but when you dump the throttle and let go, it should go boom, boom, that fast. Well, if you dump the throttle and it slowly drops down, and then you let go of the throttle and it slowly goes back up, we have a supply. We have a supply problem. And then I would be taking the fitting out of the intake manifold and cleaning that booger up. So that's how I would
check that out.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep, and if you need anybody to drive that 65 El Camino, you know, around town or to exercise or something, give me a call.
Yeah, okay. I haven't had a chance to drive it very much, but, you know, like I said, I've been working on it, getting it together, and now I got this problem. And about breathing the brakes also, okay. I'm doing one wheel at a time, starting with the right rear, mm-hmm. and I put a tube on the bleeder nipple, and I've got a bottle with some brake fluid in it and the hose going into the brake fluid. And then I get in the car and I pump the brake, and then I pump them, you know, three or four times. Then I get out, check the master cylinder, make sure it's not got any it's not too low, and then go look at the fluid to see if there's air in the line or
Is
that still a good way?
No, I don't like that. That's what your wife is there for. Okay? I don't like the rubber hoses into this stuff. I think that just creates all kinds of air leaks that we don't need to deal. So you say, honey, pump the brake slowly, and when it comes up, count to two or three. So pump and let go of the pedal. One, two, three. Pump again, honey. Hold it. You open up the bleeder. Yeah. You got a solid stream of fluid coming out. Shut the bleeder. Go somewhere else. But okay. I don't like your way because I need somebody behind. And that's all. It don't rapid fire the pedal. Don't tell her to go pump, 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 pump. Don't do that. Pump it,
right. Let
go, count to three. We have to let the rest of the master cylinder come back and gulp more fluid. And so just slow down. Use your wife. Probably not use your girlfriend because that'll cause a problem, but just use your wife. All righty?
Yeah, we'll use the wife.
Okay, thank you, Sam.
Thank you very
much. You're welcome. Glenn, you're up next.
Good morning, Mark.
Good morning.
I might have been sleeping when you covered this in class. I've got a vehicle with, I'm going on 15 months with, just about to finally reach 10,000 miles on the oil. Should I have changed it after 12 months or can I wait 15 months?
Well, let me ask you, what kind of year, make, and model is it?
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, it's a Toyota Tundra, a 2010, and it's full synthetic oil.
Okay. Most everybody would say to you that you need to go. You can go the length of the mileage. So synthetics easy, 12 to 15, easy.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to change your question, Mark. Mark, what do you do to your Dodge that holds 10, 12, 14 quarts? I do it once a year because I want to go through four seasons. And I'm going to be pretty close to that expiration date anyway.
2 minutes.
I'm going to drive it. I'm going to go from the ranch down to the shop. It's going to be nice and warm because they love that. And then I'm going to have them drain it and let it sit for a little while. And then I'm going to put oil in it. But I've been through summer, winter, fall, and spring. And I change it just before the summer starts because I like that to go through the worst part of our climate with fresh oil. But you could do either way. The answer to your question is if you want to go 15, go 15. You're okay. If you want to change it annually, you're okay to do that. It's not going to make any difference to your engine. It doesn't know the difference. It may cost a little bit, a couple of extra dollars on the turnaround, but to be honest with you, you could do it either way. Whatever makes you happy, it's okay. You're not going to have any negative ramifications either way. Okay?
Good. And I wasn't sleeping. All right. I appreciate it. Thank you.
You betcha. Tony, I'm going to get your question real quick, but I've got a break in 1 minute, and then I'm going to pick you up after the break. So go right ahead, Tony.
Thank you, and good morning. I've got a 2010 Corvette. It has 35,000 miles on it, base car. I'm having trouble with it shifting from, like, drive to reverse. It doesn't click into place. If I back the car out of the garage and go from park to reverse, no problem.
Okay.
If I were to go from drive, it's like in neutral. It doesn't click into place in reverse. What do you think?
I'm going to answer your question because I'm 30 seconds away from the break. So I'm going to talk to you on the other side of the break because that's what's fair to you. Larry, you hang around. You're next. After Larry, you can call in anybody else, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We got 30 minutes left in the show. I'm going to tell you right now, Tony and Larry are number one and number two in about 3.5 minutes from now. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. My name's Mark Salem. We'll be back. back in just a few minutes. After the hour of 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. We got a full bank of calls, so we're going to get to them just as quickly as we can. But Kurt's Automotive is at I-17 and Bell Road. I've known Kurt, and he has some fine technicians. I'd love to have them work for me. They are really good. But Eric is the cat's meow. I mean to tell you, this kid knows more about cars than this old man ever knew in my life. He may not have all the historical skills I have, but he is really good. So if you're up there near I-17 and Bell and you're looking for a repair shop, Kurtz Automotive, northeast corner, domestic, foreign, gas, diesel, and he's been around since 1977, and he's been a friend of mine since then. Okay, we're going to go back to the phone, and Tony, you have a 2010 Corvette, 35,000 miles. You're having a tough time from drive to reverse, and in the garage.
Correct.
What's that?
Yes. Yeah, it if you want to take the car from drive to reverse, it like goes into neutral. You press the gas and you're like in neutral. If I move the stick back and forth a little bit, it'll click into place, but it's easier just to go back into park, then in the reverse it clicks in.
Okay.
It doesn't feel loose, but is there something loose in there, or is it just not going into place?
Well, you've answered your own question. You're having to wiggle the shifter to get a gear. And so there's some slop in there. There's a cable that probably goes from the shifter and it goes to the shift lever of the transmission. And maybe the bracket where it tightens the cable down, maybe that's come loose. So the cable's sliding in and out of the bracket. This is really not something that's difficult to deal with. Maybe there's a rubber bushing at the shift selector and the rubber bushing's gone. So you have to kind of move the shifter back and forth. This isn't really a big deal. I'm thinking 80% of the chance. Do you have a repair shop you trust?
Yes.
Okay. If you can demonstrate this to them, if they're not interested in having you demonstrate it, that's a bad thing. But if you came into most of the shops I know, you're gonna say that. Now, Monday morning and Friday afternoons are obviously going to be tough. But you say,
yeah,
I would like a senior guy with gray hair to come outside and I can show him how I pull it from park to driver reverse, and then I kind of have to move the shifter around. This should be a very distinct click, click, click. There should be no play in that shifter. And if there is, it's a Chevrolet, and it's probably a little rubber grommet, and you'll be fine. So that's what I think you should do. All righty?
Thank you, Mark.
You bet, Tony. Larry, you're up next.
Hi there, Mark. We just purchased a 2021 Honda Odyssey Vena.
Okay.
And we were kind of curious about the extended warranty. Additional 5 years, and I think the fee was $2,300.
Okay.
Is that worthwhile to get on a car that has all these computers and everything on it?
No. No. I'll tell you what, I'll do that deal for you. I'll use their contract, which means that 8 out of 10 times I don't have to do anything to your car because you don't have the maintenance records and you were 800 miles long on your oil change and your windshield wipers need to be replaced and your wife hit a curb with the right front tire and scratched the wheel and blah, blah, blah. And then I'm going to send somebody over to the shop to look at it and he's going to come up with 15 different reasons why we shouldn't cover it. And then you're going to yell and scream at us and then we're going to say, we're sorry. Have you had enough of my gibberish here? So the answer is no.
Yeah.
Everybody, and they use that. I would bet that they put those words in your mouth with all these computer stuff. Change the question, Mark. How often do you replace a computer in a car? Twice a year. How many cars do you service a day? 30 to 40. Do you see that as a regular repair? No. And so is a Honda a dependable car? Yep. Is a Honda going to go 100,000 miles without anything? Well, there's a whole lot of cars that will go 100,000 miles without anything other than normal maintenance. Yeah. If this was your mother's car, would you spend $2,300 on it? No. Even if you weren't a garage owner, Mark, even if you lived in Des Moines, Iowa, and your mom lived in Phoenix, would you have her do it for peace of mind? No. Peace of mind? No. There's nothing good about those policies. We deal with them every day. And at the beginning of the show, I read a contract where they can do OEM parts, aftermarket parts, or recycled parts. You really think you're going to get a good deal? And then you got to pay shop supplies, environmental charges, and sales tax. And on top of that, fluids that are not covered as well. By the time you're done, they're going to pay probably 50 to 60% of the bill, and you're going to have the rest of it. So enjoy your Odyssey. I applaud you for buying it. But no. And besides that, what's the factory warranty on your Odyssey?
It's 3 years, 36,000 miles.
Okay, so they get to keep your money for 3 years, 36,000 miles. And then they're going to stand up and be no. You know, I can't make it any more clear to you. I hate working for those guys. I hate when I have a car inside that they're there. They're going to make a deal, and I'm the middle guy. Mrs. Jones or Larry, I'm sorry, they're not going to cover it because you were you didn't do your rear differential. You don't have a rear differential. You didn't do your rear differential service. Wait a minute, Mark. We're talking about a water pump. I know, but you have to be completely up to date on the manufacturer specifications. And because you missed this one, I'm sorry, you're not up to date, and you're in violation of page 12, paragraph 9. That's what happens.
Okay.
So, no, I really and truly put the 2300. I'll tell you what I'll do. If you promise to get an old checkbook stuff, ledger, and when you buy the vehicle or now, you write down the mileage and the date and put $2,300 in there. I'll buy you and your wife dinner with about $150 limit on it. And here in Phoenix, by the way, if you use $2,300 from the time your warranty's over until the time that warranty's over, it isn't going to happen. And that's according to, I've been in this business since I was busting tires in 68. I opened my own shop in 79, and I've been doing that. And I'm an ASE master, and I have been since 1991. So what's that, 29 years? So been around the block. Thank you. And Dan, and we'll stay right there because I'll be back right after this. Probably not anything you want to try, but let me ask you some questions. This is the important part of car repair, is give and take, okay? In the morning when you start it up, does it ever idle rough?
No.
In the morning when you start it up, is there any unusual clatter that's not there within 30 seconds or more than that?
There is a little noise, but then it does go away after 30 seconds or so, yeah.
Okay. Then I need you to get underneath the hood of that and have your wife or somebody start it up in the morning, and I need you to put your hand on the valve cover, and I need you to, I mean, it would be great if you took a piece of garden hose about 3 feet long and stick one of them in your ear and one of them on the valve cover, and let's make sure
that
it's...
Yeah, make a little stethoscope.
Yeah. So I'm interested in a clatter. And now, the other part of it is does it ever backfire or run rough after it warms up?
No.
Okay. See, those are the two symptoms of valve lash. Honda's always been pretty tight on the valve lash, and I want to tell you that if you come into our shop and you tell us you want us to adjust the valve, we're not going to argue with you. We're going to do it. But also let me tell you this. We don't see the symptoms on 99 out of 100 cars that come in. We just don't see the symptoms. So without the symptoms, there's nothing that needs to be done. And the chance of us on a four-cylinder with two adjustments at each cylinder, there's eight adjustments, we could change it to the worst. So backfire means the valve's staying open. Rough idle, rough running is the valve is staying open. Or the valve is loose and there's a lot of clatter in the morning that goes away almost immediately. Or it takes 2 or 3 minutes to go away. That means the lash is bigger than it should, and we're waiting for the heat of the engine to kind of expand everything. But I really think that if you don't have the symptoms, and you know, if you're my brother-in-law and I don't like you, I'd say, yeah, go ahead and do the valve adjustment. But you know, I only have one brother-in-law, so. But my answer to you is I wouldn't do it.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks.
You betcha. Will, you're up next. How can I help you?
Yes. Hi, Mark. I thank you for your show, and I would reinforce the recommendation for Kurtz. And Eric is an awesome mechanic. He's worked on my car a couple of times. So thank you very much, and for your website. Okay. My question is a 2003 Honda CRV, great car, And on the oil cap it says put 5W20 oil in it. I love to go to Costco, get their Mobile One oil on sale, and all they have is 10W30. Can I use the 10W30?
You know, can you get 520 anywhere else?
Yeah, maybe. I'm just kind of lazy.
I know.
I'm just trying to figure a way around it. So, I'll do whatever because I follow your recommendation.
Well, the 1030 doesn't come in. That 520 is more than likely a synthetic or a semi-synthetic, and it's difficult to find a 1030. Now, let me change everything. If this car had 150,000 miles on it, and you've maintained it good, and you haven't had any problems, nothing major, and you wanted to change viscosity and maybe thicken the oil up a little bit or raise the viscosity a little bit because it's using oil, maybe it puffs a little blue smoke in the morning, or maybe you're adding a half a quart of oil in 3,000 miles, I say, yeah, put the 1030 in it. Yeah, and then go to a longer oil change. But the Honda calls for that 520, and I would really like you to stay as close to that as you can. Now, if you were the kind of person that you lived in Ahwatukee and you drove your car 5,000 miles a year, I want to change your oil once a year. And I think that's what's in your best interest. It doesn't really make any difference. If you're not doing 10, 12,000 miles a year, it doesn't really make any difference. You can put whatever you want in it. But a conventional oil like the 1030 is going to have a 3 to 5,000 mile interval. So you got to move that around with a conventional, a semi-synthetic, and a synthetic. So I know you're being lazy, but, you know, the kids or the wife is going to be around some, you know, O'Reilly's or something like that that would make it easier for you to go buy a gallon of 520.
Okay, so you recommend, like, whatever the manufacturer recommends, then you should just kind of stick with that no matter what, pretty much.
The oil cap is the Bible for the car, and Mark Salem, we put what the brand is insignificant. First of all, Mobil, Shell, Phillips 66, and Chevron make all the oil for everybody.
Okay.
So no matter what you pour out of a can, it came from Mobil, Shell, Phillips 66, or Chevron. And I'm a trained oil expert with Chevron and Valvoline. The idea is you can really do whatever you want, but for Mark Salem, those motors today can cost $20,000 for the motor, so I need to make sure that I'm putting the right oil in there because I don't want to buy a motor. Now,
no problem.
All right, but let me change that just a bit. I've never seen someone lose a motor because they had the wrong oil in it.
No, that's cool.
Yeah. So
I got you. Okay, Mark, right. I do appreciate your advice.
Okay, you bet. Automatic Transmission Exchange is on 40th Street in Washington. He was there when Washington was a dirt road, really and truly. When Washington was a dirt road, Phil was there at Automatic Transmission Exchange. He knows the old cars and the new cars, but what he really is an old car guy. From the very first automatic transmission through the power glides and through the torque flights and all those old transmissions, Phil's got them. But the technology translates perfectly to new stuff. You know why? In the old cars, we shifted it and we changed fluid pressures based on a couple of different things, but most of the time it was the throttle. It was just the throttle. So we'd shift it based on your throttle. Today we have all kinds of sensors that look at the speed, the RPM, the ambient temperature, how many people are in the car, where the foot is at, all that kind of stuff. And then after this happens, in the blink of an eye, they decide to shift your automatic. So if you're looking for a transmission shop, Automatic Transmission Exchange, 40th Street in Washington. There's a couple of transmission shops out there I don't like. You can find them on the internet. Just look at some of their reviews. Anyway, let's talk about my diagnostic skills. I would never represent to you that I'm the best guy out there because I can name 10 guys that are a lot better than I am in every aspect of car repair. There may be a few even better than me in business. But let me explain. The give and take is what's important in the car repair industry. It's very, very important that you and I can communicate. So you'll notice in this show, you tell me what the problem is, and I ask you questions. You got this problem in the morning. After it warms up, is it there? No, it isn't. Well, when it's cold, is it worse? Yes, it is. I have a vibration. Is it in the seat of your pants or on the steering wheel? I've had all the tires rebalanced. Did it change it? No, it didn't. Well, it's not tires. Does it come and go? Yes, it does, or no, it doesn't. You see, this give and take is something that should take place at the front counter. This give and take is where, even if to the point where the shop says, you know what, Mrs. Salem, Let me bring out, hold on a minute, I'm going to come up with it. Let me bring Eddie out. And Eddie's a master tech. He's been with me 30 years. And what I'm going to do is have him go take a ride with you. But before he goes with you, can you duplicate the problem? No, it only happens on Wednesdays. Okay, well, it doesn't do any good if you can't show him what's going on and duplicate the problem. You got two choices. You can come in on Wednesday, or you can park it here, and then we'll start it together and go driving on Wednesday. Or you can wait till it gets worse and easier to find. Those are the only two options. Or I can start throwing parts at it as much as you want. So I need you to have a budget of about $3,000, and I'm just going to start replacing parts until I get it. That's what's missing in our industry, is this give and take. Sometimes the person at the front counter doesn't have enough skills to answer the questions. But when the shop hears that this problem is intermittent, it comes and goes, the shop should say, can you duplicate it? And when the customer says yes, my God, that's a great thing. So barring Monday mornings and Friday afternoons for obvious reasons, there's no real reason why a shop can't pull a technician off, unless all the shop's technicians are greasy, haven't washed their hair in 14 days, they smell like cigarette smoke, and their hands are all greasy, and their feet, the boots they're wearing, looks like that they've been soaked in an oil bath. But we all have those, as well as nice guys and clean-cut guys and guys that can do that. So that kind of back and forth is important. The last thing is I don't want you, and I know I leave this perception a lot, that I'm beating up on my industry, because I'm not. This show is called Self-Defense for Car Expense. That's what it's all about. Let's talk about the pitfalls in my industry. Like I said before, 5-10% of the shops out there really have their interest in front of yours. The rest of us have your interest in front of ours. So we're going to play the game like it's supposed to be played. We're going to try to fix your car. We're going to talk to you. We're going to identify the symptoms. We're going to verify that we can fix it. And then when we're done, you're going to say to us, when we're done, after $300 or $3,000, I'm not going to have that problem anymore. Right, Mark? That's a conversation you can have. Give me your business card, and let me make sure we're on the same path. After you get done, and I spend $400, that vibration is going to be gone. You're not going to call me back and say, well, we got most of it, but now we need to replace the flywheel. Okay? I need that calm feeling that you're going to be able to fix it. Gil, you got somebody else?
Yes, we do. We have John.
John, good morning. How can we help you?
Good morning, Mark. Just want to ask you, I kind of caught your show a little later than I usually do. I got it at 10:45. And I was wondering if you talked about this or not. What are your thoughts with you being a GM guy and GM saying they're going to be all electric by 2035?
Well, I'm not really a GM guy, but I do like General Motors and Fords and Hondas and Toyotas and Dodges. I think all of those are quality cars. They're all double-digit with the cars on the road. So everybody else is a 1% or less. I'm not real interested in the 1% cars. The cars that represent 1% of all the cars on the road, those are difficult to repair. They're usually the quality is a little less than the top five guys. So I like to, and I'll be honest with you. My wife drives a Ford. God bless her. She hit her head years ago. I got a Dodge. I got a Chevrolet. I got a Suburban. My daughter drives a Dodge and a Ford. God bless her. Alan drives a Dodge, and his wife drives a van, and she drives an Edge. My mother drove a Buick. They don't even listen to me. They don't even listen. But it doesn't make any difference. All of those guys, Chevy, Ford, Dodge, Honda, Toyota, they make good quality cars, and they represent sometimes 5, 6, 7, 10% of the cars on the road. So I really like those cars, but I know those cars a lot better than the Subaru that was made 1 year in 6 months. And those are the ones that are difficult to fix.
Well, Mark, I want to get your reaction to GM saying they're going to all-electric vehicles by 2035.
I think it's a great marketing ploy. You can... You, Someone said to me the other day that recent election kind of tells you where the majority of the people are thinking, and I think what they meant by that, and I'm walking a really clear line here, I'm really doing a good job so far, and that person said to me that he thought that the environmentalists were represented in that, so GM comes out, and if Mark was in GM, I would say the same thing, that electric cars are just right around the corner. I think electric cars are around the corner. I think the batteries are the real big problem, and I think Tesla has really made tremendous strides. I don't know any, I know lots of people who own Teslas, and they all love them. Now, they can drive from Phoenix to Payson, and then they can go over by Subway and they can charge their Teslas up. I had a friend of mine, I was riding up the hill with him not too long ago, and he says, I've always wanted to measure against a Tesla because they're supposed to be so fast. And I said, you know, I wish you wouldn't do that when I was in the car because you scare me when you drive that fast. And, oh, you wouldn't believe it, but this Tesla pulled up. We're right outside of Rye. And all of a sudden, he takes off, the Tesla takes off, and he just beats the Tesla up. And his head is swelled up big, and he's thumping his chest, and he wants to stop at the bar and drink some Crown. Here's the problem. As we pull into town, this is a true story. We pull into town, and the, by the way, the Tesla wasn't going very fast. We pull into town. We pull into the subway. The Tesla pulls in, and we parked on the other side of the parking lot. The Tesla pulls in and plugs in and then comes in and gets a sandwich. So I walk over and say, hey, how you doing, and all the stuff. And the plate was like no gas or something like that. And I said, how often do you have to charge that? And she says, oh, we barely made it here. Well, that's the reason why he beat the Tesla, is because the guy didn't want to waste the electricity. And I am not an advocate of drag racing. And I said to my friend that was driving that car, I hate the fact that you did that. So anyway, I'll see you next Saturday. And I believe electric cars are, in fact, a big part of our future as soon as we get the batteries under control. But like I say, Tesla's done the best job. So there's my advertisement for them.